The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
It's the Beating the Book podcast, Gil Alexander. This is the one I've been looking forward to for quite some time. My NFL draft special, from a betting perspective, of course, and to help me along with it, Drew Dinsick. You may know him from Twitter, from the handle @whale_capper, the whale capper himself. Just a great dude, super insightful, super thoughtful when it comes to betting. Have him on a numbers game on VSiN to talk tennis. Mostly, but perhaps football is his number one sport, along with tennis. Love talking all sports with him that he has expertise in, and certainly the NFL is chief among them, as witnessed here in our draft discussion. This was fun. I did a previous segment where I went through all of my NFL draft props that I'm betting in depth. Didn't include that here, but I do refer to them during the show. Some of my thinking has actually changed on a few of them, so all of these things are dynamic. But Drew and I get into that as well. Hope you enjoy. I think you will enjoy. I'm confident that you will. NFL Draft, exclusively right here with Drew Dinsick on the Beating the Book podcast. Enjoy.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Yes, he is. It is Gil Alexander live from San Francisco. Good morning to you. How you doing? Hope everything's good with you and yours. Staying safe during the global pandemic. We'll try to keep you distracted for the next couple hours. NFL draft extravaganza here with our buddy who usually joins us to talk about tennis. You can find him on Twitter, obviously, Whale Capper. That's what he goes by. He's our buddy, Drew Dinsick. Good morning to you, Drew. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, good morning to you, Gil. This is fantastic to be on. This is a super exciting that we finally get real live sports to handicap, albeit, not of the contest variety, but the prop market for the NFL draft is one of my favorite markets to get into every year. And this year, with the unbelievable amount of offerings, you know, everybody's getting into the game, it feels like, and there's more variety, more arbitrage, more intrigue. Like, this is one of the better drafts of kind of my betting life. And so I'm super fired up for this year.
Couldn't agree more. Something I've been into for years as well. And it just seems like, based on the circumstances, everybody's into it this year, as you point out. First of all, where are you, by the way? It's good to see you outside. Where are you?
So I live in Long Beach, California. We finally are getting spring here. We have had like this prolonged, protracted, cold, wet, like winter into spring. So it's finally nice. Weather's breaking. A little bit of hope. California in general is feeling pretty positive about the pandemic. So we're rowing the boat in the right direction here.
I'm in San Francisco. It got gorgeous yesterday as well up here. but we will talk draft. And let me just start. You know, I've been doing the last week or so is we've been batting Danny Burke, who's in studio there in Las Vegas, and I have been batting back props. I've given my bets that I've made, but you make a great point there right off the top. And so how I want to approach it today is just kind of go through how we see the top 10 unfolding. And from that, we could sort of unravel some of your bets, some of the things you're thinking about. But you start with that initial point. I think we should probably emphasize that again. I have in past days, but let's just say what you said there. The opportunities to bet in many places. We can't emphasize that enough, can we?
No, there's probably only one core tenet to this. I mean, there's a couple. This is an information market. It's unique. It isn't the same as like a Sunday NFL game. Limits are different. The way the market moves is different. And that's massively important because there's no Don Best screen. There's no, there's no one market making book that is really establishing, that is doing price discovery. Right. Like when it comes to an NFL game, like there's pretty clearly there are market leaders that will take bigger limits earlier that are out there doing price discovery, that are sharpening a market before, the guys that want to lay 5-6 figures on a game can get in. And that's not the case at all with the, these kind of betting props because, they don't show up on the screen. You can open up three books at, across, Vegas, offshore, New Jersey, and you're going to see prices all freaking over the place. And it's just a much more rigorous manual task to kind of align different books and kind of balance risk when you have this kind of unusual marketplace. And because of that, that presents an enormous amount of value to us as the bettors, because you can pick off, risk-free bets, pretty much throughout the entirety of the cycle, let alone betting into numbers that you think will move, a substantial amount in, March, and then coming back in April and taking a scalp.
Gil Alexander, Drew Didsik, our guest this hour, talk NFL draft with us here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, and Game Plus. And the other, the other big thing that is key with a draft like this is the notion of mock drafts. So our research, so to speak, what we're basing our predictions on, obviously have nothing to do with ball games we've watched in recent weeks and in a larger swath of a sample size, but really with a cadre of quote-unquote experts that are mock drafters. And I'm curious, A, how much you rely on that, and then B, which are the specific authors of mock drafts that you rely on more than others, maybe?
This is an incredible talking point, and I'll lay out my thoughts on this. But I'm curious, because you've been doing this for as long, you'll be doing the, paying attention to the space for longer, and your opinion may be even more well informed than I have on this. But at this point in time, I kind of take specific experts who have especially broad platforms, wide reach, and kind of categorize them in my head in terms of, okay, this guy's putting out a mock. Like, where is this information coming from? Right? Like a guy, like we'll start at the top in terms of, audience with ESPN, right? A guy like Mel Kiper, like I'm not looking at his information. I'm not catching news bites that Mel Kiper is dropping and using that to make actionable bets, because in my opinion, a lot of his information is sourced from agents, right? He's a lot of his power, a lot of his, resource to the industry, is coming from agents, and he's doing solids for various, parties. And that's kind of, his source as far as I can tell you. And so for that reason, it's kind of disconnected from reality in terms of what teams are going to pick what. Right. He probably has some sources in league circles. He's been around for long enough. But, his kind of main role, his main sources, in my opinion, don't really inform, a draft process. Similarly, McShay at ESPN, I feel like he thinks of himself as kind of an NFL scout in his own right, and is much more involved in the process of evaluating talent, trying to identify needs for teams, and trying to do his mock in the way of, okay, well, I'm going to find the perfect fit for each player for each team, right? And that's also not really a way you want to approach this. You want to find a guy that has that is well connected to a number of front offices, well connected to a number of scouts, and because his mock draft is going to reflect much more a reality of the board once we see it, in my opinion. And of the guys I look at, I think Daniel Jeremiah at the NFL Network is at this point in time the most well connected. It used to be Mayock, I thought.
Totally.
But nowadays I think Daniel Jeremiah's got the inside track on a lot of this stuff. And then beyond that, like the cadre of, people who are kind of entering the space and, doing their own mock-ups, guys from, Draft Network and, some of the other, burgeoning, writers out there, they're kind of a mix of kind of taking some information from the info guys and combining it with their own scouting. And I think, kind of the McShay model of kind of putting together a mock where you're informing it based on your own film and your own scouting and trying to identify team need, like for us as handicappers, that's the least useful. But that's the most prevalent information out there.
I think that's a great breakdown. Just to sort of buttress your Daniel Jeremiah point, I think he's a number one, too. Sort of the football draft followers that I respect go that way as well. By the way, these things are graded, right, in about years gone by. So we could actually see the performance of some of these guys from the past. And, the one sort of counter argument I would make to what we're saying, oftentimes, so I don't want to rely too much on any one person, right? No one person is sacred in their predictions. But like I love Jeremiah so much, for instance, Drew, that when he comes out with another iteration of his mock, when something changes, it is like a bomb dropping in my draft world where I'm like, oh my God, what happened between 2.0 and 3.0? So perhaps I get more, I'm more rattled by that than I should be if I was diversifying a little more. But he's a guy that I really rely on. And then there's the old tried and true thing for me, which I don't think can be overstated enough, which is we hear this from people about, following beat writers during standard sports seasons. But this is the one time for me where I can't get enough of it. Now, it has to be reliable, right? Because there's a lot of, shenanigans out there, too. We might have seen that with Isaiah Simmons going to the Giants, for instance, earlier this week. But I think, like, for me, just as a guy who grew up in Washington, D.C., as a Redskins fan who still talks to my Redskins peeps all the time, and I'm not a beat reporter for the Redskins, but there's something about having the pulse on your local team. And the Chase Young example is a great one for me here early on, and we'll see if the Redskins do draft Chase Young in the end. But I've never wavered on them drafting him, while others have sort of speculated about trades that sort of ebbed and flowed through the last couple weeks. It's just like, no, they're not. It just doesn't feel that way to me based on everything I know. So it's a combination. Look, there's no science to this other than know who you're relying on, and that sometimes the biggest names aren't the ones you should be relying on the most.
Dude, what a great point. there's the guy I turned on notifications for back in the middle of March who covers the Giants for like NJ.com, a guy you've never heard of in the sports landscape, but he was the first guy that was beating the drum with the Giants are going to take Daniel Jones at 6 last year. And I remembered it because I was like, man, this guy really is sure of this. Like, what is going on?
Yeah. He really seems sure. Certain.
Yeah. And then by March 31st, he was on it in like mid-March. And by March 31st, like every other major outlet across all of, New York, New Jersey was like, yeah, no, this Daniel Jones thing seems real. And then sure enough, he goes off the board at 6. And I made a pretty decent amount because just kind of speculating because this one guy was like so sure. And so I've had him on, notifications on just to see because, I don't think Gettleman has especially made up his mind. I do think they're almost certainly going to go offensive line. But of these top three guys. Of these top three guys, I don't think they have made up their mind yet. And so I'm still kind of, I have a little bit, some positions to kind of cover what I think they're going to do. But, I think we'll still get, a tip of the hand here because Gettleman tends to, whereas some organizations are very cloak and dagger smoke and, you know, really try to, you know, misdirection. Gettleman has always sort of been, you know, I'm going to tell it like it is. And, you know, once I got, you know, some information and I say it like that, it is what it is. So yeah. I think we'll see them tip their hand in the next week, but we'll see.
And last thing about that Daniel Jones getting drafted by the Giants early last year, you saw on ESPN, largely because some of their experts didn't have that happening, right? It was the other guys like NJ.com, as you point out, that had Daniel Jones going to the Giants. We actually have tape of the reactions of folks on ESPN just going nuts when the Giants draft him, right? Like, oh my God, we didn't see this coming at all. Because it's this weird insular world of our experts are predicting something, and so therefore all surprise emanates from that. It's this weird sort of universe. Anyway, by the way, Drew Dinsick, I said at Whale Capper earlier. That is incorrect. It's at Whale underscore Capper. Let's make sure we... Yes. I don't know where we're going if you go Whale Capper. Could be something entirely different.
Oh, yeah, right, that guy's a lunatic.
Oh, is he? Let's begin with... Oh, wow. Maybe that's worth a search in its own right. 1-2, then. Let's just start there. Let's get that out of the way. Are we convinced, are you convinced, that it is Joe Burrow to the Bengals and Chase Young to the Redskins?
Yeah. I talked to somebody who bets in the UK, and, you know, we were kind of truly pricing this yesterday. And I gave him prices of, you know, basically minus 5,000 that Burrow goes one. And I think for Chase Young to go two, I have it in the minus 1,000 range at this point. But just kind of like your sentiment of the, you know, the folks that are well connected to the Redskins, and I've heard other people say this besides you, is that Chase Young is a slam dunk there. You can still find prices, you know, and again, because this is such a short turnaround at this point, like we're a week away, like, and because there's no other sports going on, it's not like you lock up your bankroll, you're not going to be able to get your bets down on the NBA playoffs, right? Like, fire away, in my opinion, in terms of price at this point. And, you know, there are places, you know, bookmaker will take big limits, and, you know, they have three props up right at the very end of their offerings that are all like, will the Redskins trade the number two pick? No. Will they take Chase Young? Yes. You know, and then, you know, otherwise you can take, you know, set up the exacta in Burrow and Chase Young and still find some value there. It's a juicy price, but I think that there's probably no better, you know, there really is no other kind of sure thing as you head into this draft cycle than those guys going 1-2.
Couple points there. One, you're right. I mean, it gets to your point about, oh, you can bet the Chase Young thing in multiple ways, even at one book alone. Also, just sort of side note, a little disappointed in Bookmaker. They had some other draft props up last week and the week before, and they kind of disappeared and never come back.
So I don't know what they're doing.
What that's about.
Yeah. They were taken I remember from the cycle last year, they definitely were slow and kind of tepid in terms of putting their foot into the water in terms of offering. But once you got to the couple of days before, they were taking pretty big limits, bigger limits than you could get at some of the other offshore offerings. So worth keeping an eye on them because they'll throw some stuff back up, I bet, and they'll give you a pretty healthy shot at it as we get closer.
A great point about that. All right. So I was going to jump ahead to number four here before really diving into 3, 5 and beyond. Maybe I should anyway, but you said something there about four and the Giants, which I had kind of written off as not as much of a lock of Burrow to the Bengals and Young to the Redskins, certainly not, and certainly not a specific player. But I kind of had decided this is not just me deciding, but based on all the mocks, that this is an offensive tackle. You still think it's an offensive tackle, or how sure of that are you?
Yeah, no, I'd put... A good example. You can, if you wanted to try to dial in on the Giants, there are markets for will they take an offensive or defensive player? And I think the offensive player, beyond just the fact that it makes the most sense given where they've invested their top, you know, their top investments in the draft in the last 2 years in a young quarterback and a young running back, like Gettleman needs these guys to succeed or he's no longer going to be the Giants GM. So taking, you know, a top tier, taking the best tackle off the board, is kind of, you know, is, you know, and again, I don't want to go back and lead into, well, these guys should do this, so they will, because that'll get you in deep trouble if you think too much in that mindset. But you know, Gettleman invested a ton, and I guess this week in some of the interviews, some of the comments he's made, he basically, you know, has kind of pointed to the fact that they invested a ton of their draft capital through free agency into the defensive side of the ball. And he belaboring that point, I think, was him tipping his hand a bit in terms of how they intend to allocate their draft capital towards the offensive line and some of the other, you know, some of the other holes that still exist on that team. Granted, best player available may be a guy like Simmons. You know, people may want Simmons to end up in New York just because he's such a dynamic talent. And he could be an exciting guy to cover from a, you know, from a media standpoint. But, you know, I think the boring pick and, you know, quote unquote boring pick in terms of taking one of the best offensive linemen is where they end up going. Prices around are kind of in the minus 150 range for taking an offensive player. I would have made it in the minus 250 range. So I think there is some pretty good value still on betting Giants take an offensive player. And then it comes down to how they evaluate these three guys that are at the top of the tackle market. It's, you know, I definitely hear from, you know, scouts, from evaluators that they think, you know, that there's a clear one in, you know, in a guy like, or, in, you know, a clear one in terms of ceiling in a guy like Becton, and a clear one in terms of floor in a guy like Willis. But then, you know, the measurables, which is kind of Ben Gettleman's telltale throughout his entire run as the GM, like, he just falls in love with guys who pop off the numbers at the combine. And that's pretty clearly Wirfs. So if I had to take one stab, it would be Wirfs. But, you know, we still need to see Gettleman tip his hand on this one, I think.
All right. And for those who are wondering, like, why'd you go from two to four there? The reason is because the Giants being locked into an offensive lineman, again, unless you believe the Simmons stuff, but being locked into an offensive lineman allows for all the speculation of what's to come. Drew, they're pesky commercials here, so I rather than jump into it right now, we'll do it after the break. But when we do come back, we'll talk to Drew Dinsick about what will the Lions do at number three? Because that's really where the draft begins. If you're to believe the Burrow, Chase Young exacta at the top, do the Lions take Jeffrey Okuda, a guy that we've said on the show here on A Numbers Game? If you're playing the draft game, Lions, you probably could draft him a little later. But do they love him so much that they would take him, obviously, to fill the Darius Slay absence? Or do they make a trade? And if so, who do they make it with? Are the Dolphins the team to trade down after failing to tank? Are the Chargers so interested in one of those two guys, Tua or Herbert, that they would be willing to trade up? All of these questions, get Drew's thoughts and more. Will there be a run on offensive linemen early and then wide receivers after that? Drew Dinsick coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Preston Johnson to come as well, and we'll throw up my draft props at some point here on the show as well. Coming back, NFL Draft on A Numbers Game at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game, Gil Alexander live from San Francisco, where sports betting analytics live here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. By the way, join us for the VSiN 2020 Draft Special live next Thursday, April 23rd. So 8 days away now at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Our draft betcasting experts, Matt Humans, Michael Lombardi, Brent Musburger, Jonathan Von Tobel, and other special guests will analyze the draft from a unique betting perspective. Of course, they'll track all the available props, that is, as each selection is made, and alert you when they cash, of course, all through a betting prism. Check out the VSiN 2020 Draft Special live Thursday, April 23rd, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. My guest, Drew Dinsick, kind enough to spend the hour, with us talking NFL Draft. So number three then, Drew, let's get right to it. The Lions are sitting there. Darius Slay no longer with the team. Jeffrey Okuda from Ohio State is sitting out there. What do you do? You're the Lions.
Oh, man. If I'm in that room, I've been preparing to trade this pick all winter. And now I'm looking around wondering, you know, if I'm going to get an offer, if we're going to be able to evaluate the offer in time, or if we're just going to have to end up, you know, taking the best player or, you know, top player on our board, fill a need, even though he may not be the best player available. That's kind of the quandary they find themselves in. And this happens year in, year out, where you have a team that's, you know, kind of on the cusp of the surefire, no doubt talent, in this case, the top two being Burrow and Chase Young. And, you know, you think, okay, well, this should be a power position for these guys, right? Like, they should have a lot of leverage. They should have a lot of chips because there are teams behind them and, you know, picks 5 and 6, notably, that absolutely have a need at quarterback for the future. Whereas the Lions are well set up in that standpoint. And so you should be able to leverage those teams into giving up some assets, getting some extra picks out of this, because guess what? The Lions have more holes than just cornerback. They have lots of holes.
What?
This is a team that is devoid of talent on the defensive side of the football. This would be the type of time to, you know, flip this pick, get some assets. But I don't know. I have a very, very, you know, a very, very skeptical viewpoint of how likely trades are going to be in this draft. I think it's such a complicated, such a hectic, complicated 10 minutes when you're getting offers and evaluating, you know, the worth and what you'll do with those picks. And, you know, it's, you know, if they had gotten it sorted out in the couple of days beforehand, that would be one thing. But to expect it to happen in the moment, I think is pretty, you know, pretty tough ask. And that said,
do you think, Drew, that the nature, you know, you and I were talking about this off air a little. Do you think the nature of the pandemic and the fact that we're all doing this remotely this year makes it even more likely that inaction will rule the day? Inaction?
Yeah, no, I think there's a number of hypotheses that hold water. And one of them for sure is that you'll have fewer trades. And I think it's born entirely out of the fact that draft rooms will be spread across, spread across the country, everybody contributing remotely. And, you know, I still think that it's not out of the realm of possibility that a team like the Chargers knows the guy they want is also at the top of the draft board for the Dolphins, and that they may give up the King's ransom to move up to 3 with the Lions. That's still a realistic possibility. In that scenario, I do not expect that they would go up for Herbert. I mean, for Tua, I would expect they go up for Herbert. That's the one kind of outstanding scenario that I have in the back of my head that I'm kind of hedging against. But I do, at the end of the day, I don't think that they're going to be able to have enough assets to trump whatever Miami can offer. Miami has so much draft capital this year. They are in such a power position. They can pretty much squash whatever the Chargers offer, which I think de-incentivizes the Chargers from even trying to offer. And I think Lions end up taking Okuda, whether or not he's the right player at that spot or just fills the glaring hole that is created by the move of Slay. I do think that's where they end up.
I land on the same thing with that. You and I are simpatico there. I just think the Lions end up taking Okuda. And by the way, if the Chargers do trade up to draft Herbert or Tua, but I'm with you, probably would be Herbert if they did that. That goes against everything that Anthony Lynn has been saying to date, which is not Tyrod Taylor is our guy. But we know it's lying season. So anybody to their word at this point, Anthony Lynn or otherwise. Got to take a break here. Drew will come back. I do want to talk about what you feel the Dolphins and Chargers then, in fact, do at 5 or 6. Do they just stand pat? And are the Chargers, if we know that about Anthony Lynn saying that about Tyrod Taylor, are they absolutely going to pick a quarterback? We've kind of penciled in Tua, Herbert, in any order there at 5 or 6. Maybe not. Coming back, Drew Dinsick. NFL Draft right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Quick Picks Classic offers real money matchups of pro sports superstars from their greatest seasons, playable in Quick Picks head-to-head parlay game. New NBA matchups posted every hour. And for those asking, NFL games will launch later this week. And with Quick Picks Classic, you can select your first ticket for as little as 10 cents and win up to $50,000 for each entry. I'm not saying the 10 cents one will get you to 50,000, but you get the idea. With Quick Picks Classic, the system utilizes historical official stat lines from specific seasons, then evenly matched athletes are pitted against each other. You make your selections, then the Quick Picks system randomly selects official stat lines from each athlete's season to determine a winner. Quick Picks Classic has the same big payouts as the Quick Picks daily live game. 3 out of 3, 5 to 1, all the way to 10 out of 10, that'd be 500 to 1. You know the players. You know the game. Use your edge and win big. Got to be 21 or over in one of the 28 states where Quick Picks is available. For all the details, go to quickpicks.com/VSiN bonus. That's quickpicks.com/VSiN bonus. Drew Dinsick remains with us this hour on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gil Alexander talking NFL draft. So if the Giants then go with an offensive lineman at four, whether it's Tristan Wirfs from Iowa or whomever, because it will be a bit of a offensive tackle heavy top 10, I'm guessing. What then ultimately do you think happens with the Dolphins and the Chargers at five or six? And just before the break, I just sort of threw out the thing about, do we know that the Chargers are absolutely drafting a quarterback? Cause I mean, Cam's still out there, right? I was asking Michael Lombardi about this yesterday. Like, what if they just take a tackle and then, you know, like then have Cam, like, are they not a top five talent, you know, talent laden team in the NFL at that point? I don't know. What are your thoughts on five or six? And then there's two of them, right? With the burying the headline.
So Tua and the Dolphins have been this kind of media narrative that's gone on for now, what, 6 months? You know, tanking, you know, going back to the Dolphins getting their clocks cleaned by the Ravens, I feel like people were like, oh, tanking for Tua. Right?
Tua. Yeah.
Yeah. Tua was the number one on draft boards last April, right? Like, he was expected to kind of be the guy, number one, Heisman favorite, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of legacy here that I think has carried perception that he is still this super valuable asset in the face of a lot of evidence that teams are not going to take a chance on him given his injury status. I don't think it can be understated how significant this injury was. And I don't think that the smoke that has come kind of been, you know, you can't miss it if you're following the NFL media, you know, this last couple of weeks. Like, you know, teams are really, you know, skeptical about how serious this injury is, how long he's going to be able to play in the NFL. And, you know, are those evaluations correct? That's not what we're here to talk about. Like, we're here to talk about, you know, right, is this big enough injury to scare teams from really pulling the trigger on a guy that otherwise clearly has the talent to be a, you know, franchise quarterback and a top five pick. You add a little bit of kind of, you know, a little bit more intrigue to this question in this equation when you start to see and hear evaluations from players like Gil Brandt, I mean, from, you know, from personnel guys like Gil Brandt, from, you know, guys who are connected to the Dolphins, you know, connected to their general manager, who are like, nah, this guy is more in the Bill Parcells mold of general manager. He wants a tall kind of measurables quarterback that they can mold, you know, and that's a Justin Herbert, like, pretty clearly. And so there's a lot of signs, there's a lot of breadcrumbs here that tell you that the Dolphins, you know, prefer Herbert. And in which case, you know, that you have to wonder if any of, you know, if any of the, you know, leverage that the Dolphins have over the Chargers is really to get, you know, they want to get their guy in Herbert. As opposed to, you know, just taking, you know, we don't really care. We evaluate Herbert and Tua on the same level and we'll take either one of those. So I would say that there is enough smoke and enough breadcrumbs here for me to have gotten involved earlier when the prices were, you know, were completely upside down on this. Less than a week ago, you could have gotten Herbert as the second quarterback overall in the plus 300, plus 400 range. You could have gotten Tua as the third quarterback overall in the plus 800 range. You know, that's basically telling you that there was like an 80% chance that you were going to get Tua and then Herbert. And as you look at it now with the information you have in front of you, does that sound even remotely close to reality? I don't think so.
Oh, no.
I mean, at best, this is 50-50. Yeah, at best. And so, you know, I kind of stick to a couple of tenets that I think, you know, have kind of kept me out of trouble in drafts the last couple of years and got me into trouble in drafts previous years betting. And that's, you know, when you have kind of a guy that you feel like is going to be good in the NFL and you kind of in your mind have, you know, him at a certain tier or a certain rating. And then, you know, there is any kind of an injury red flag, these guys fall like stones when it comes to draft day. And you can point to a number of kind of the best bets that I've made in the draft prop market last 2 years. And it was literally finding smoke from more than one team on an injury that a guy, you know, that they had red flagged the guy for injury And, you know, that sort of mindset becomes viral, you know, no pun intended. You know, and the next thing you know, you have everyone in the league is afraid to touch the guy. And, you know, so I think Tua absolutely falls into that category right now, which I think leads the Dolphins to making the safer pick with Justin Herbert at 5. Again, you know, this is, I'm not saying it's more likely than 50-50. Certainly the way that this has been priced over the last month has been, you know, completely upside down, in my opinion.
So you do think in the end Dolphins with Tua? That's what I'm hearing.
I don't know. I'm thinking Herbert. I mean
Herbert at 5.
I think they go Herbert, and some of that is speculation based on the general manager and his connections to the Bill Parcells tree and the type of quarterbacks they tend to score higher on. Some of that is speculative. I think Herbert at 5 has legs.
You made such a great point off air, because I, you know, when we're talking about a guy dropping, and obviously the most famous modern day example is Aaron Rodgers dropping all the way down into the 20s when he came out of school. And I'm not saying Tua is going to go that far down, but you made a great point off air, which is sometimes it's just as simple as the reason he drops is not because people don't like that individual, just like they haven't prepped to draft a quarterback. They've talked about all these other players for months on the lead up. And so that player just by default kind of trickles down. I think it's as simple and as good a point on that. We don't often hear that in mainstream media where it's like, yeah, they just didn't really plan on this happening. We got to take, you know, it's like, it's that stupid. One more break here, Drew. We'll come back because I do want to hone in on 6, and then will the offensive tackle run continue, I guess, if number 4 was one? Will there be a couple more here coming off the board? Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper. We'll talk about his podcast as well. We'll plug that coming back from the break right here at A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is A Numbers Game. Gil Alexander live from San Francisco. Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper live from the outdoors in beautiful Long Beach, California. I said something right before the break, which was actually, there you go, take a victory. I love that old cartoon victory signal. I said before the break, and I was talking about you actually saying it during the prior break, about this notion of sometimes when a player falls, it's just kind of as simple as we really hadn't been talking about him. We haven't done our due diligence. You wanted to flesh that out a little more as it pertains to the 2020 draft.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were on the Chargers and your points were very sound in the previous segment. Like, they have gone above and beyond in terms of padding, you know, Tyrod Taylor on the back. I mean, to a degree, that seems ridiculous. I mean, no one loves Tyrod Taylor that much. Even, you know, Anthony Lynn can profess his love to whatever degree he wants, but I don't know that he's fooling anyone. And you're right also in that the Chargers have a team outside of quarterback that is rostered to compete for a championship. Like, this team is stacked, especially on defense. And, like, they only really have the one hole at quarterback. Their offensive line's not great. They could use some help in the offensive line. And clearly this is a draft where, you know, in the top 10, you can take an elite talent and for the offensive line. But, you know, that quarterback position is a huge question mark. And, oh, by the way, they're moving into a brand new stadium in Inglewood, and they are having an extremely difficult time selling tickets for their, you know, this new endeavor. So the idea that they come out of this draft with a quarterback of the future and can really sell this to the fans, I guess. I mean, I live in Los Angeles and supposedly they're around, but I certainly don't see them. But
Drew, it's as if they abandoned their fan base in San Diego or something, you know?
It is.
I can hear everyone in San Diego going nuts right now.
It is. And, you know, hey, they were like, hey, people in LA, they watch the Chargers. Well, it's because they're on TV. It's not because they love the Chargers. Sorry. The idea that you come out of this draft with a quarterback, if you're the Chargers, is pretty appealing in terms of being able to sell your, you know, the future of the franchise here. But if your only choice, if you can't make a trade up to 3, if you can't get ahead of the Dolphins, and then the Dolphins take Herbert, who, you know, you had penciled in as, you know, was going to fall to you at 6, Do you pull the trigger on a risky asset like Tua? And that is an enormously important question. If Tua does not go at six, where does he go? The free fall could be absolutely epic. And all of this is predicated on what we were talking about just a minute ago. You know, like the preconception in January, February, and March for every team in the NFL was that Tua was going to go potentially top three. So if you weren't expected to, you know, you kind of make a decision like, okay, well, how do we feel about Tua? Well, we're okay at the quarterback position. We're not going to give up our entire draft of assets to move up to three to take him. So we're out of the Tua game. Let's focus on the other, 500 players that are available, right? And so you allocate your resources in terms of preparation to the guys that you think you have a reasonable chance will be on the board when you are picking. And you may not be dedicating your time and your effort to evaluating a guy like Tua. Throw a monkey wrench into this in that the entire, coronavirus quarantine has, prevented, teams that are in the quarterback market from doing full medical evaluations of him. And you have kind of cooked up the absolute worst case cocktail for this young man, which is really sad because, in any other year, this may be a very different outcome. But I think the reality of, him falling out of the top six is real. And if that happens, where does he land? I mean, we mentioned it, that, a team like the Raiders could use a quarterback for the future, but, we've got Mike Mayock on record as saying it's been, the most difficult part of this entire process has been, not having medical evaluations and our medical team not getting the information. Yeah. So if you can't, if you're there on the, pick 12 comes up, you've been preparing this entire cycle for which of these three wide receivers are we the most excited about because we need a wide receiver. And then, oh, by the way, a guy that could be the best quarterback of this draft falls in your lap at 12. Do you pull the trigger on him if you're the Raiders, or is it too risky of a decision? And, it kind of comes down to what we were saying, which is that you may just have not you may not have enough information in hand, in-house, through your scouts haven't, your medical team hasn't gotten their work that they needed to get done on this guy. And therefore you have to pass on him. And I think, you look back to the Aaron Rodgers draft and the fact that he fell to 24. And how prolonged that slide was. That wasn't like a Johnny Manziel type of slide where every team had kind of had their chance to think about it and decided not to pull the trigger. That was much more of a, actually, we thought Rodgers was going to go number one, so we didn't really do our homework on him. And that ended up, biting a lot of teams in the ass.
I just think it's such an interesting dynamic. I mean, you think about teams like the Jaguars who, many think are tanking for Trevor, right? All of a sudden, if Tua falls in their lap at nine, they're like, they have 10 minutes to basically decide on their legacy as personnel, decision makers. Yeah. It's like, what do we do? Same thing with the Raiders, as you point out. So if the Chargers so Herbert goes to Miami, let's say, your hunch is that the Chargers go offensive tackle then? Does that begin the offensive tackle run, or not begin it, but continue it?
So I made a play that Tua was going to fall out of the top six at plus 775. And
very nice.
You know how this goes when you get a number like that. And now I'm looking at BetOnline now has field over top six at plus 225. So that's come way in on top of the fact
about
that's now.
Wow.
That's absolutely wild. And I don't think this is unrealistic at all. But it's the same kind of thing. Like, when you get like just an outrageously good number in the futures market or something like that, or let's say you went with Joe Burrow for Heisman last year in August, right? And he goes through the first couple of games and he just shows out, and all of a sudden, you see his number, you have 101 in your pocket, and now they're reopening the market and it's, 5-1 or whatever, right? Like, it's tough not to, cognitive biases start kicking in and you're like, this is definitely going to happen.
Totally.
You get all of this confirmation bias just washes over you and you're like, this is definitely going to happen now.
Gambling is fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I'm fighting that cycle right now with Tua is going to fall. Right. Cause I have a pretty good amount kind of spread out on, Herbert going second, Tua going third quarterback taken, Herbert second quarterback, Tua third quarterback, and then Tua falling out of the top six are all in my portfolio with some pretty nice positions. So at this point, I'm just trying to say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to let this market go bananas. It's going to completely flip upside down, and I'm going to take some scalps before we get to draft day, because I don't want to be in this position where I have all of this value and let it go to waste because I've, you know, convinced myself that it's for sure going to happen. So I'm walking on eggshells around this topic right now, but I'm prepared for. But to answer your original question, if Tua doesn't go six, what do the Chargers do? They take the best tackle off the board, and honestly, this I think sets up for a tackle run in the top 10, as you kind of alluded to earlier, because, you know, I see teams at six, I see teams at 8, 9, and 10 who all could use help on the offensive line. I think actually really this sets up for, you know, just an offensive line heavy first round overall, which would be another nice position to take, in my opinion, as we head into this draft, just over 5.5 offensive linemen. I'm pretty overweight on that one.
Yeah, there's some props out there you can see it at 5.5. There's some that you can see it at 6.5. That could go either way. Some people think there'll be more than 6.5. Just to get back to Daniel Jeremiah for a second, since we brought him up earlier, he's got Tua going at 6, which should be noted in his 3.0 was the first time he had Herbert and Tua flip-flopped. He then has Derek Brown going to Carolina, the defensive tackle from Auburn, at 7. Number 8, talk about the offensive lineman now, back to the offensive lineman, Jedrick Wills from Alabama going to Arizona. They obviously want line help for their young quarterback, Kyler Murray, and, of course, their new acquisition, DeAndre Hopkins, as a target. Makes sense to go after an offensive lineman. Mekhi Becton, Jeremiah has penciled in for the Jags at number 9. Becton from Louisville, of course, and then rounding out the top 10. I think this is very interesting. Isaiah Simmons, you talk about a guy that falls into a team's lap. I mean, Isaiah Simmons, I don't want to call him generational, but like there's kind of a scenario. And if he ends up at Cleveland, that's a real good spot for him.
Yeah. As football fans, that's what we should all be rooting for, because that makes the Browns-Ravens games over the next 5 years must-see TV twice a year. Right. Like that is an absolutely perfect stopper. I mean, you remember back when, you know, Lamar Jackson was a rookie, they go up against Chargers and Derwin James just completely, you know, wiped him off the map for 3 quarters. Like that's the kind of player Isaiah Simmons is, in my opinion. I see a lot of similarities between what Simmons can do and what Derwin James can do. And so, you know, Cleveland obviously desperately needs offensive tackle help. And I think a lot of the mock drafts, you see them slotting best available offensive tackle to Cleveland. And that's probably the most likely scenario. But if a guy like Simmons falls in their lap, that's a match made in heaven for football fans worldwide. So I'm pulling for that personally.
Point facing him twice a year. Yeah.
Oh, good. It's such a good matchup. But, you know, I do see Carolina at 7 as a potential landing spot for Simmons, just because they lose Kuechly and Simmons, you can potentially plug in as a linebacker. And they're not the same player, obviously. They're very different in terms of skill set. But, you know, I could see that happening as well.
Drew, let me bounce in. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get more specifically into some of the bets you've made, some that you're eyeing. We'll throw up mine. I'll talk about where I think I may have gotten torpedoed. Certain category I'm not feeling that great about. Coming back, NFL Draft with Drew Dinsick on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
It's A Numbers Game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is A Numbers Game. Hour number 2, Gil Alexander, right here live in San Francisco. Our San Francisco outpost here on the network. SiriusXM Channel 204, Visa.com, the Visa app. Phobos Link Game Plus, Drew Dinsick, kind enough to stick around for one more segment with us to wrap things up about the NFL draft. So before we get into specific prop bets, Drew, if you would, so let's just run through them 1 through 10. Again, this is the Drew Dinsick mock. Again, this has nothing to do with anything but how it feels right now. But it's Burrow at 1 to the Bengals. It's Chase Young 2 to the Redskins. We talked about Jeffrey Okuda going to Ohio State at 3. Wirfs at four.
Yep.
And then Herbert at five. What do you got after that?
Yeah, I don't mind slotting Tua six just to kind of for an emotional hedge on top of, you know, it makes sense that the Chargers come out of this with a quarterback. And then after that, I like Brown to Carolina at seven. I like Becton at eight. I think fits scheme-wise a little bit better with Arizona. They'll more likely go Becton than Wills. And then Wills, I think, goes nine to Jacksonville. Jacksonville, obviously all in on Gardner Minshew this year. That makes sense. He's on such a team-friendly contract. You find out this year if he's your guy, that's great. You know, you got him locked down on an unbelievably team-friendly contract for a couple of years. If he's not your guy, you're at the top of the draft next year picking a guy like Trevor Lawrence for the quarterback of the future. So that all checks out. And then at 10, I think you get a tough call here between Simmons and reaching for a next tier offensive tackle like Andrew Miller. I'd like to see Simmons go. I could see Andrew Miller. I'll slot Simmons in there just as a fan standpoint. So pretty similar to what DJ has up in his mock 3.0 is kind of informed most of my betting on this top 10.
Yeah. And then I guess the run on wide receivers begins thereafter, I suppose. How many wide receivers do you think? First round and second round? I mean, it could be a dozen.
Let's talk about that actually, because I think there may be a betting value on under wide receivers at this point. We've seen this in years past where there are so many good options, and running backs fall in this category too. This can be the same kind of conversation, I think, running backs and wide receivers for this draft. I see a pretty clear tier one for wide receivers in the top three. That's unimpeachable, right? There's going to be, you know, three of these guys are going to go between 11 and 20, at least between 11 and 22 when the Eagles pick. You're going to see all three guys go, right?
In some order. Lamb and Ruggs you're referring to.
You got it. And then after that, you have kind of Jefferson in a tier by himself as sort of 1B. But beyond that, all of these guys, Higgins, Ayuk, and then down the list from there, another seven guys.
Mims and Rager,
these guys are all on tier two, and they're more or less indistinguishable. And when that happens, that tends to de-incentivize teams to reach, teams to trade up, and teams think that, okay, well, you know, we're going to address a position of scarcity rather than go and take a wide receiver now when, you know, we have another pick coming up in, you know, 20 picks or so, and, you know, we can just take a guy there. So there are clear needs for wide receivers in this year's draft. The wide receiver market in free agency was extremely soft, I felt, and I think that was born out of the fact that so many teams are coming into this draft expecting to take wide receivers early. But I think you could see more going round two in round two, just on the basis of teams aren't going to need to, you know, they aren't going to force it. And they may choose other positions where, you know, talent is a little bit more scarce. Cornerback comes to mind immediately there. Offensive tackle as well. There's about, you know, there are kind of two clear tiers of offensive tackles, in my opinion. And after that, it falls off dramatically. So if you get one of the top six tackles, if you need one of the top six tackles, you're going to take one of them in the first round. So I could see a situation where we only see four or five wide receivers in round one, which may create some value on under 5.5 wide receivers. But I'm going to wait until that number gets a little bit bigger before I jump in.
Gil Alexander, Drew Densick here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, talking NFL draft. That's a great point about wide receivers, man. It is really true. Like, yes, there's a whole bunch of them. But after the first four, is there any one of them that is so much better than any of the others that teams are, as to use your word, super incentivized to draft one of them as high as they might otherwise? It's a great point. And what makes these drafts so interesting when you get down further in them. Let's go back to the top for a second. I was making this point with Michael Lombardi, host of the Lombardi Line here at VSiN yesterday, which was every year, you know, we tend to forget the inexact science of this. Every year in recent history, Drew, there has been a shocker at the top of the draft in the top five picks. Some more shocking than others, right? So there was, you know, even Baker Mayfield at number one, people forget until the last 24, 48 hours, like he was not the number one pick in the draft, right? So like that even in the short lead up became a bit of a surprise that he ended up number one to the Browns. Obviously, Mitch Trubisky, the Bears trading up to number two to grab him after 13 starts at North Carolina was a shocker. Joey Bosa went way higher to the Chargers than everyone had projected. And then even last year, right? Farrell going to the Raiders at four was like, whoa, what are they doing? Like no one had that.
Yeah.
Are we missing something here? Like, might we be missing something?
Yeah, we might be. We could see the one thing that's been in the back of my head that I have not made any action on that I'm scared about. Because it would wipe out a bunch of bets that I have. If the Lions take a quarterback, we could see a scenario where Stafford gets dealt. I think this is a team that isn't built to win now. Stafford is on a pretty big contract. There are teams out there like the Chargers, like the Patriots, that I feel like could make a deal for a guy like Stafford. In which case, you could see the Lions take Herbert or take Tua, whoever they prefer. And you know, this, it may be that they may talk themselves into this because they're not getting the type of deal that they're expecting for the third overall pick. And they may just say, okay, hey, look, like a lot of guys in the Lions organization really need to reset the clock to save their jobs. And a very good way to do that would be to basically start over, at the quarterback position. So I'm a little, you know, that if there's something totally bananas that happens that would totally shake up the top 10 of the draft, I think it's at the Lions pick at three.
Man, a shudder just went through me. Like if something just blows up all of this talk is just rendered completely moot.
Stranger
things, man. Stranger things. Danny, if we could throw up the ones that I've bet so far, globally, these are all from Bookmaker, just to be specific, where I bet these. This is what I bet so far. By the way, not all of them, because I don't know if we listed. The very first thing that I bet was actually under 4.5 quarterbacks when Caesars first released it, and they limited me, Drew, as I famously talked about on air, to a $300 wager. Not to win $300, but $300 to win less on under 4.5 quarterbacks. That's a whole nother story. But these are the ones with a bit higher limits than that, although not much more higher, by the way, it should be pointed out. These aren't like massive bets that are allowed. But to the degree that you can bet them, a nickel here, a nickel there, which pick will Chase Young be drafted under 2.5? That was my first bet on Faraway Places back in March, March 23rd. That, as you point out, probably good value at this point at minus 550. And then a whole slew of them on April 1st. Total players drafted by Bama in the first round. I actually went to 6 on this, so I took a flyer at plus 100. I could easily lose that one if McKinney doesn't get drafted. Total players from LSU drafted in round 1, feel very good about the under 5.5. Total players from Ohio State drafted, feel very good about the under 2.5, despite the juice, as I see it being Young and Okuda, and that's it. Total players from Clemson drafted over 1.5. I think you could get as many as 3. Total players from Georgia drafted round 1. That one may fall by the wayside because I don't know if DeAndre Swift is going to get drafted. So I may lose that one there. Total players from Auburn drafted under 1.5. Feel good about that. Although, of course, none of these are locks. Here's where it gets into sort of teams versus conference. More first round picks. I took a flyer on Bama versus the Big Ten. Now, I was talking to you off air. And one of the things that I've realized here in the run-up is my Achilles in this draft may end up being the Big Ten. I may have underestimated the Big Ten in the first round, but I have Alabama at big plus money. We'll see. I do like Clemson in a straight-up versus Oklahoma. 2 or 3 Clemson players, I think 2 Oklahoma players. Total players from Big Ten drafted in round 1, under 5.5. I may lose that. More first-round picks, ACC versus Pac-12. I took the ACC -0.5. More first-round picks, Clemson versus Ohio State. I took Clemson +0.5 at -190. So those are all my picks. I feel great about a bunch of them. Not so great about a few, as I pointed out.
Mm. I'm in agreement with a lot of those picks. I mean, you have enough value from early on that you're at least going to be able to capture, you know, you could at least cover your stake if you like. And I'm with you on this Georgia bet, and maybe it'd be fun to kind of pick your brain a little bit on what to do now, because this has moved in your direction a lot. And in general, you know, do you have a strategy for, you know, when you make a bet like Georgia over 1.5 at -120, it's currently market wide at about -200 right now. You know, you can come back on and capture, yeah, you know, basically buy out of that and get but get some, you know, some winnings accumulated. Like, are you going to take any of the liability off on any of these plays?
I think on that Georgia one, I may just try to get off it. Yeah. And that's one of the things.
I'm with you on that. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Yeah. I'm prepping right now for that, because I do agree. Like, Swift, if he
did, you do the same thing on that?
Yeah. Well, at the time I made the bet, I thought Swift had a chance, and then I thought the other offensive tackle that they, you know, the guy's an underclassman, and I thought he was going to shoot up as we got closer and closer. But you know, this the quarantine has completely you know, stunted a ton of the like late risers. Like, it used to be that you could kind of look through the underclassmen every year and pick out a bunch of guys that were going to be late risers. As you know, teams kind of did their homework and figured out, like, oh wait, this guy should be a first round grade. We just, you know, we weren't prepared to evaluate him, and now he's a late riser, right? Well, you know, there's a Isaiah Wilson, I think, the guy, the second offensive tackle from Georgia besides Andrew Miller. He might be better actually as a pro, maybe a better prospect. But and I thought there was a chance he could sneak into round one if Swift fell. And so I took a swing on that Georgia. But now I'm looking at it, and you know, running backs, whew, man, the top tier 1 through 5, there's such little separation between talent between 1 and 5. Why would you waste a first round pick on one? I just can't imagine it.
Isn't that amazing? Like, telling our child self, you know, this running back thing that's so big now is just not going to matter that much when you're an adult. This is incredible how the game has changed. What are your favorite props that you have in pocket right now, Drew, in your portfolio?
So by far, make or break for me will be the sixth offensive lineman off the board for this whole draft cycle.
The entire thing will come down to that. Yes.
The entire thing. If only 5 offensive linemen go on day one, I could win every other bet, and I'm still going to have a losing day. So that's what I'm most doubtful about.
Before you continue with that, you know, one of the things, and I try to be as authentic as possible on this show, which is to be 100% authentic, is it's amazing what I've been saved from this year.
Oh, sure.
But I'm not in the state of Nevada, so I wasn't able to bet certain things where my first instinct was like, oh, I got to bet this. And my first instinct on the offensive lineman was actually unders on 6.5s, couldn't bet them. And I'm glad now. The other thing was there's a prop at Circa. Will 2 players get drafted consecutively from the same?
I saw this. What was that prop? What was this price? -1,000? Yes. What?
Well, no. So the no. Here's my instinct at first was the no was 10-1, right? And this was when I was in the Okuda might get, you know, they might trade that pick thing. And so the no at 10-1, I was actually like, ooh, I wish I was in Nevada. I could bet the 10-1. By the way, within a half an hour, the no had gone down to 6-1, and I wouldn't have bet it anyway at that point. Because at 2 or 3, right, 2 and 3, there's the Chase Young, Okuda, Kiniella, to use a high ally term, that's sitting right there. But you're right, like the send out was priced wrong either way.
Yeah, I didn't know it opened at 10-1. Even at 6-1, I stared at that a long time yesterday. I
was like, funny. We both gravitated towards the same one.
It's because the price, it just didn't make sense. Like, because you look at a price like that in the draft market, and you're basically like, they're pricing a sure thing. Like, who is the sure thing that 2 teammates go back to back in this draft? Like, if it's not Chase Young and Okuda, like, you really, you think you could see Judy and Ruggs go, I guess. You could see Ruggs maybe another Alabama player. You could see was the linebacker from LSU and Jefferson could go in the 20. These are, but the likelihood
but
there's of
those no
things,
lock in other words.
There's no lock. Definitely no lock. So I saw what you saw, and I honestly still may take a swing at +600 because, you know, if it's not 2-3 Ohio State, you know, if anyone else besides Okuda, I already have Okuda goes third at a like plus 200 ish. So I can take a swing at plus 600. And then if he doesn't go third, at that point, it's a lotto ticket. Like I don't see the balls bouncing in a way that is a sure thing that they're going to be two teammates back to back.
I saw the 10 to 1 and I actually stared at it and I probably texted 3 or 4 people and I was like, you have any money in your Circa account? Nobody came up with it. I was like, all right. By the time I got around to it, it was 6 to 1. I was like, all right, maybe I'm not going to bet this.
I took the screenshot of that. I sent it to 3 different group texts. I was like, what am I missing? Like, what was like something is not.
You and I did not talk about this before the show. People should know that. We did not talk about that before the show. Yeah.
No. But overall, though, for sure, my I'm most overweight on offensive linemen. If 6.5 builds some steam to the over, I'm very hopeful that happens in the next couple of days because I would love to come back on under 6.5 at close to even odds and cover some of my liability on that. And then I can have a total risk-free, stress-free day one. That will be fantastic. So that's fingers crossed there. CJ Henderson shooting up draft boards across the mock draft space. His total was 16.5. I fully subscribe to, his floor is pick 16 to the Falcons. Entirely possible that somebody in the 11 to 16 range takes him. He fits with the Broncos for a need standpoint. If the top 3 wide receivers go before the Broncos get to pick. So I could see Henderson get picked in the top 16 about 80% of the time. And there's still some value to his under 16.5. You're looking at 141 right now at DraftKings. That is a slam dunk because some of the market making books have him closer to minus 300 right now for 16.5. So that's a great look.
NFL.com comparison we have on the screen for CJ Henderson is Carlos Rogers. Jeez, I hope his hands are better than Carlos Rogers. God, that dude dropped more picks than anybody over the course of career I've ever seen. Anyway, I'm sorry. CJ Henderson.
His ceiling is probably pick 9. I could see him going to the Jaguars if the Jaguars, because Jaguars could pick anybody.
Any position.
They could go. Most talent devoid roster in the NFL, and it's not close. And they just need to stockpile assets for next year, really. So,
AFC championship like a minute ago, right?
It's incredible. It's wild how quick these turn over. So those are two I especially like, the offensive lineman and CJ Henderson. We mentioned in the off the top. I have a pretty decent amount on Okuda, pick 3, Wirfs first offensive lineman, because I think there's a reasonable chance that the Giants take him 4. And if the Giants choose not to, if the Giants go Simmons for whatever reason, you still have a live shot that Wirfs is the first offensive lineman taken. I at the prices that I got them, Herbert, second quarterback overall, at about plus 400 was a banger last week, and then Tua, third quarterback taken at what used to be plus 700, and we're starting to see these come closer to even odds, which I think is more reflecting reality. Those are in my pocket right now, I made a couple of plays that I'm not super psyched about.
We all have those, yeah.
Yeah.
What are those? But, out of curiosity,
I bet D Brown under 8.5. I didn't get a great price. At this point I had kind of felt like he was the perfect fit for Carolina, before I realized that there was a likelihood that, Simmons could fall into that 7 spot. But, so D Brown at under 8.5 is in my pocket, but I'm feeling pretty nervous about that one. We talked about the Georgia too. I bet over 1.5 Georgia players. I got that at about minus 120. And even though that's moved in my direction, I feel like that's a bad play right now, and I'm probably going to buy out of that.
I'm totally with you on that, and I'm going to do the same. Drew, I appreciate it, man. You have been very generous. It's going to be fun to look back on these and see how we did. And I don't know if you'll be live tweeting that night. I know I will be. But should be fun 8 days from now.
For sure.
Thank you so much, Drew, man. enjoy your day. And hopefully next time we talk, we can talk about meaningful tennis.
Oh, yes. Thanks again for having me, man. This was a ton of fun.
My man, Drew Dinsick.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.